The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is March 28th, 2024. I guess to address that Peep was slandered online, I'll just get right into it. Peep was slandered by a mean reviewer who doesn't like us, I guess. And they said, no one cares about Peep. And I think I'm my funniest when something like that happens, and then I just post like petty things. So I had a few funny story posts about Peep. I drew some tears in her eyes with the review, with the Arms of the Angels song. And I used the Oprah meme of the were you silent or were you silenced? So just being silly about the whole thing. But Peep, she's not here right now, but she was just over here and we were recording the Patreon episode. But don't worry, she will not be silenced. I couldn't even shut her up if I wanted to half the time. So she will still be part of the podcast. And I know that I've always known that people liked Peep because I'll get messages about her and how people think it's funny when she meows. But the amount of support that Peep got after this rude comment, it was crazy. So I'll try to post more Peep content for those who are interested. She is quite the diva, quite the personality. She's even, I was saying on the Patreon episode we just recorded, she goes through phases where she'll be here meowing, but she's much worse when I'm not recording. I don't know if it's the time, but there are times where she really just does not shut up and I'm like, oh my god, please be quiet, you are so annoying. But she's sassy. Cute. She just demands attention. She knows what she wants and she's going to get it. Got to respect that.
I feel like we're only a few minutes in. So if you are new to the podcast and you're like, what is this chat? You can just go to the notes, click it, and it will take you to all the crime content. You don't have to listen to the chat if you don't want to, but we know some people like it. So we try to cater for everyone.
Yeah, it's tough. Some we get comments that people hating the chat, people loving the chat. So there's timestamps if you don't like them. If you love the chat, join the Patreon because we definitely chat more there every single time.
We're like, okay,
we just chat for 20 minutes and then we're like, oops, we still have other stuff to do. So yeah, but did you want to talk about the last little car update for everyone? So,
I know someone, I was saying in Patreon, someone wrote on Spotify, is this just about car repairs, this podcast? So this should hopefully be the absolute final update. I can't really see anything else happening, but it's Friday here. Monday we went and signed for the refund. So that was all fine. And then we're like, can we get our stuff out of the car? So there wasn't much in there because we got it all out when the car was towed, but there was just a few little like bits and pieces. He's like, yeah, come over, we'll get it. Go over to the car. He's like clicking the unlock button, nothing happening. And he's like, oh, so what they did was the part they ordered didn't fix the car, which is not surprising. So they had to take some like electronic or technological module out of the car to send to Korea, which they did. And when they did that, they then disabled the battery of the car, but with the spare manual key inside. So it's like a push button key thing, but they also give you one manual key, which you can use to unlock the door in an emergency. We told them that key was in the glove box. They didn't get it out. So that the car is unable to be accessed. I'm like, is this the last comedy of errors that's going on? He's like, we'll mail you all the stuff. We'll get in there. I'm like, look, don't worry about it. It doesn't matter. It's nothing of value. It was just little things. Just let's end our relationship here. But then the next day he called
me again.
Yeah, he called me again and he's like, Olivia, I just want to check. Do you have a spare key? And I said, I told you 2 weeks ago, the key's in the glove box. We never took it out. Like when we got the car, I'm like, I really need to take that key out. But we had the car for 5 minutes, so I never ever got a chance. And I'm like, I told you it was in there. He's like, well, we can't access the car. And I'm like, well, I don't know what you want me to say. This is no longer my issue. You were told where it was and you guys didn't get it out.
So you have no reason to even want to help them at this point.
And I'm like, you're a car dealership. I'm pretty sure that there is a way for you to get into cars. Call a locksmith. Do you know what? If it comes to it, break a window. Like there's, because the car is parked, I'm assuming it's still parked in the service area. So they obviously need to move it to wherever they're going to move it to. But I'm like, oh my God,
clearly the car doesn't fucking work. So just break the window. Like it doesn't work. You're not reselling it.
He did tell us on Monday that the head office are fighting them to not take the car back. They're basically saying it's a dealership's problem. And I'm like, well, none of this is my issue any longer. Hopefully that's it. I can't even imagine why they would need to call me again. The money is back in our account. The issue is over as far as I'm concerned. I was tempted to block him on every single thing, like my phone, email, everything, but I thought just in case.
You can't, because if he reaches out again, like it has to be something absolutely ridiculous and we can't miss that. People need to know.
Keep it for the content. But yeah, so as far as I'm concerned, the car saga is over and done with. And when we're there on Monday, he's like, so where are you buying your new car from? And I was like, the audacity of you to ask me that.
Anywhere but here.
So anyway, done, finished. Thank you for playing along with me for 12 weeks or however long it took. It was a very stressful 3 months.
Yeah, apologies to those who didn't fucking care.
I know you said you had a ton of messages about Pete, but still to this day I'm getting messages from people asking me or giving me their stories as well. Like I know this happens a lot and not just with this brand of car. So the one thing I will say is if this is happening to you, stand your ground. Like one lady's like, you need to be aggressive. And I really think you do. They just treat you like you're a piece of shit and they will do anything.
I try to make you
right
feel
thing.
Stupid. Like
Yeah. And like even when we're the last few weeks, he's like, you understand, which he said multiple times, you understand this is a very big thing. It's not like I'm just giving you $1,000 back.
Yeah, have a brain.
But I'm like, you gave me a car that didn't work and could have killed my family, which is bigger, basically.
Yeah.
So anyway, stand your ground. You deserve to have a proper outcome. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's definitely way more people who cared than people who didn't. There's only one comment of someone complaining about it, and there was very many of people being like, we need to know what car it is. And we gave you a hint. It was 3 letters.
I feel like there's only one car manufacturer with 3 letters. So yeah. If you need the details, message me and I will tell you every single thing about the model of the car. But, you know, in the end, we got the right outcome. So I guess that's kind of good on their behalf. But it took a lot of pushing.
Yeah. And just going back, if you ever do actually need information from us or there's something that you want to tell us that you want to see promptly, just message us on Instagram. That's the best way because we do go through all the Instagram messages. Even if we don't respond to all of them, just because there's so many, we do go through them all. Like the Spotify comments, I don't always check them promptly because I have to make sure that my self-esteem is in check before I hurt my own feelings by reading them.
Sometimes when I log onto Facebook, I'm like, well, that message has been there for so long, but Facebook just doesn't show us properly. So Instagram is definitely the most reliable way to get in touch.
Yeah. So please do that. And don't ever think we're ignoring you. It's never on purpose. We try to go through everything all the time. But as you all know, I'm sure Instagram and Facebook and everything, they can be a little finicky sometimes. So I guess we'll get into it. We kind of have like a potpourri of topics to talk about today. We're going to be talking about some dough cases, but we also want to talk about the Ruby Frankie stuff, the newest information that's come out. And it's actually a good chunk of stuff, so that'll be a good chunk of the episode as well. So probably like half Ruby Frankie, half doughs.
Yeah, I think so.
Some new stuff came out about Ruby Frankie. We did an episode on her when this all first came to light. Just in summary, she was the YouTube blogger, 8 Passengers.
Mommy blogger.
Yes. A lot of stuff about raising your kids and how she would punish them and stuff like that. But she got a lot of heat because some of the stuff she did was just not right. And that was before all this. She was always kind of controversial. But if you don't know the whole backstory, we have a whole episode on it. I feel like it's like a really good episode, so go check that one out.
It wasn't that long ago either. It was this year, I'm pretty sure. So
we did not that we don't always do a lot of research, but that one was a lot of research. I looked for tons and tons of clips. I think it came out good, and it'll give you guys a good picture of the whole story up to this point. So we'll start with the newest stuff. What came out is that I guess the police or the investigation seems like they released more information and documents. So there's some handwritten diaries detailing how she carried out abuse on her children that have been released. And this honestly takes a turn that Olivia and I both were kind of shocked about.
We were saying before we recorded, like, I always knew that what she did wasn't right and that she was abusive to her children, but I thought she just did it because she was a bit of a bitch. But I actually feel like she is crazy. Like, she's insane.
Yeah, I agree. So in the diary, she detailed starving her kids, making them perform grueling manual labor. And once she even attempted to smother her evil and possessed son underwater. Prosecutors say that Ruby was actually motivated by religious extremism, which was kind of the shocking part to us. I think that she was probably always a little, I don't want to say crazy. I know it's like not the right thing to say, but she was probably always a little mentally unstable. I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but I do think she was definitely preyed upon or fed into Jody Hildebrand. She kind of seems to be the ringleader in putting these ideas into her head.
I didn't realize before all this has come out that she was so motivated by religion. And we were saying it's very Lori Vallow-esque. Like absolutely.
It's interesting.
Could have gone down that path if she hadn't been found out.
It's like you were saying, nothing about that I watched in her videos or in the previous episode that we did. Like, sure, maybe she was regular religious, but then she didn't even come off as someone who was like, I go to church every Sunday. I'm very, very religious. Like, I didn't really get that vibe from her. So I don't know. We'll just keep going. And there's like 60 pages that came out, but a lot of it's redacted. Some are just kind of like the back sides of pages. It's the whole thing. So in redacted entries, she repeatedly wrote that her son and daughter, so to remind you, it's pretty much her, I think it's like the younger son and the younger daughter.
Yeah, the two youngest of the six children. Yeah.
Yeah. She referred to them, they're called R and E in all the documents. And she said that they were spawns of Satan. In July 2023, an entry about her son, she wrote that she won't feed a demon. Ruby and Jody Hildebrand shaved the children's heads as punishment, forced them to work outside in the heat, and denied them beds, all purportedly to break the ties with evil, because Ruby thought they were possessed by a demon. So by not feeding them and torturing them, it would get the demon out. One thing Ruby wrote was, if you engage a weak-minded soul in a physical activity of obedience, you can begin to break the bond Satan made with the weak. In other entries, she said that her son was a compulsive liar with a cold, dead heart. So last July, Ruby wrote that she shaved her son's head for refusing some demands. After he attempted to run away the next day, she said that he was like a snake. She wrote, he slides and sneaks around looking for opportunities when no one is watching. Ruby wrote in another entry on July 10th that it was her son's birthday. And in the following day's entry, she describes holding his nose and mouth and pushing him into the pool. She wrote, big day for evil. She also describes her 10-year-old daughter as manipulative in recounting how she made the girl stand in the rain for hours, cut off her hair, and once doused her in dog wash water after she complained about not eating for days. Should I like read a snippet here?
Yeah, you might as well.
So I'll read an excerpt. This is the one from his birthday. It's from July 9th, 2023. She wrote, R turns 12 tomorrow. I never envisioned him being 12 and still pooping/peeing himself. Satanic choices lead one to becoming destitute, even in the most affluential homes. Then next day, July 10th, 2023. Oh, so this is the birthday one. That was the day before. She writes, it's R's birthday. He doesn't even know what month it is. E and R have been in so much deviant behavior, they won't control their bodily functions. They're both furious. Their selfish, sinful lifestyle is being intervened upon. I told R he emulates a snake. He slithers and sneaks around looking for opportunities when no one is watching, and then he scurries. If he wants to emulate the Savior, he needs to be 100% obedient with exactness. No wavering, no hiding. R lies, I mean all the time. He is a compulsive liar. I never would have suspected this entire experience as a shock to my system. It's a little hard to read there. This is where she writes, the cold, dead heart R has. Here's another part that says, I told R that he needs God. I invited him to fast and pray. R is in and out of possession. He is workable and calm for a bit, then angry and defiant the next. The only consistent thing about R is that he lies. E is better behaved with Jody. She likes to think she can manipulate me. I gave her a pixie cut. All her long hair is gone. No more distracting with her hair. R told me he would rather have a glass of water than me as his mother. This is the big day for evil. E manipulates me. She won't scream when Jody is around, but with me, she wails all night. E screamed, cried, and would hit her head on the floor. Today, Jody confronted her. E admits to putting on a show for her mother. E says she wants to be pitiful. R was told to stand in the sun with his sun hat. He is defiant, in quotes, no. I tell him a couple more times. R, or I should say, his demon stays in the shade. I push R into the sun. R comes back. I come back with a cactus poker when I poke his back to get him into the sun. R doesn't even flinch. I poke him on the neck. He's in a trance and doesn't appear to feel anything. Jody taps him on the cheek to wake him up. The devil doesn't like when you get your subject to something to truth. And then it's kind of like she's quoting a conversation. She says to R, do you know I love you? He says, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. She says, do you know? For some reason, they call Jody G. Joe. Do you know G. Joe loves you? Yes, ma'am. Do you know the Savior loves you? Yes, ma'am. R wants out of his outcomes. After our talk, R stays in the shade. I take my old mop water and go to R. I show R the water. Then I pour the water on him. It's hot outside. Quotes, feels good, doesn't it? Yes. And then this is when she goes on. They push him into the pool. He gets out. Jody says to him, feels good, refreshing. He says, yes. Then this is where she covers his nose and mouth and puts him into the water. She says, I then put my hand tightly over his nose and mouth. And this is in quotes, I'm coming to you in this water and putting my hands on your nose/mouth. The devil lies and says, I'm hurting you, abusing you. But R, what am I really doing? And he says, you are putting oxygen on me to help me breathe. Yes, that's right. So it goes on and on. It's kind of similar to that. There's some parts that are worse than others with just like putting the kids out in the desert. They're complaining that it's hot. And she's like, well, hell's hotter, so get used to it. Like trying to burn the demons out of them. She talks a lot about them like pooing and peeing themselves because I don't know, either they're just so terrified that that's what happens, or maybe she's not letting them have access to a bathroom. She cuts the girl's hair a lot so that she's bald. And then it goes on to talk about how Jody was looking to buy like a big area of land, and like that they were doing this for the kids, and the land was in the desert, and it was going to be to try to get them to not be possessed by demons anymore. It really does seem like she was out of touch with reality, but spiraling. It's interesting to read some of it. Yeah, some of it's hard to read, but definitely worth it if you want to know more about it. So videos, police reports, and interrogations from the investigation were also released. There's a clip of Ruby's son being interviewed by authorities after his mother's arrest last summer. And when he was asked about the wounds and lacerations on his ankles and wrists, he tells investigators that he got the injuries, quote, because of me. But he later told investigators that Jody had bound his feet and arms with weights and applied cayenne pepper and honey to his open wounds. And there's pictures of this. It looks very painful. There's also body camera footage that shows police finding Ruby's daughter in an empty closet. In the video, she appears emaciated with her head shaved and only comes out after hours of coaxing and food.
When officers go inside of the home, that's when they make another heartbreaking discovery. Ruby Frankie's young daughter, who we're referring to as EF, sitting inside of the closet, cross-legged on the floor in complete silence.
You come in, my buddy. I'm a police officer.
Are you going for the union here?
Hey, you okay? Is this you in here? I'm Sergeant Tobler. What's your name? I just have one. Where's your sister at?
Contact one.
You okay? Huh? You doing okay? You don't want to talk to me? Yeah, that's okay. Can you come with me though?
Sergeant Tobler would later tell ABC News they initially believed Frankie's daughter was a little boy due to the young girl having a buzz cut at the time. Tobler then tells EF they apprehended Jody Hildebrandt, but the little girl still sits silent, seemingly too afraid to speak.
We got Jody out here.
You know Jody?
She's outside with us. You take your time, bud. I'm in no hurry. I'm a police officer. Did you know that? I don't mean to hurt you at all. You doing okay? Are you scared? Yeah? You're okay. Do you need help? You want to come with me? No? I'm not going to hurt you. Promise. See this right here? It's a badge. It tells me I don't hurt people. I'm just here to make sure you're okay. You're in no way in any trouble. I'm not here to hurt you. I just want to make sure you're okay. And I get if you're scared. I would be too.
Still visibly afraid, the officer then offers reassurance to the young child by sitting down on the floor with her.
I'm just going to sit down.
It's okay if I just sit here with you. We don't have to say anything if you don't want to. Okay? I'll just sit here with you.
A little more than an hour later, EF is still afraid to leave the closet. Sergeant Tobler asks the young girl if she's hungry and would like some food.
I'll get the screen, okay? When you're hungry, you can eat. Thanks, EF.
EF seems nervous to eat as she stares at the small personalized pizza for several minutes before slowly inching the food toward her so she can take a bite.
Prosecutor said in a statement, the woman appeared to fully believe that the abuse they inflicted was necessary to teach the children how to properly repent for imagined sins and to cast the evil spirits out of their bodies. At her sentencing last month, Ruby apologized to her children and told the court that she'd been suffering delusions. She said, my distorted version of reality went largely unchecked as I would isolate from anyone who challenged me.
I feel like too, just to interject quickly, I don't know if you remember in the last episode that before she was found guilty, she said that I think it was the son had been sexually abusing other children and was looking at pornography and stuff like that. So she, you know, tried to blame it on him still after she was caught with what was going on, but she tried to switch it that basically he was an evil person and was involved in all these horrible sexual things. But she's just crazy.
So Jody told the court she loves Ruby's children and expressed her hopes for them to heal. She said, my hope and prayer is that they will heal and move forward to have beautiful lives. I'm willing to submit to what the state feels would be an appropriate amount of time served to make retribution as an outcome. She's like a dumb bitch. Despite them starving the children, photos of Jody's home have been made public as well. There's tons of food. It's a very organized looking pantry. Lots of things to eat.
The house
so
is beautiful.
Like, there wasn't like food.
The house is worth over $5 million. It's set in like the desert. There's a beautiful pool. Like I would probably say it's like a mansion. It's beautiful. It's a stunning home with everything they could have ever needed to have a very comfortable life. And they still did this to the kids.
Yeah.
So there were some calls too that came out between Ruby and her husband after she was arrested. And like, so in the call, they're talking about how the children have to go to hospital for 3 days. And she's like, that's totally unnecessary. Why would they have to be in hospital? She said, Satan has taken everything away from me that I love. I'm a good woman. I don't do naughty things. I'm really a good girl. She also told her husband that if she was acquitted, she would stay away from the children. And he said to her that they would have legal restrictions placed on her access anyway to the children until they turned 18. And she said, I figured such. God told me when I was driving before I called you, the spirit said, your children are going to be removed. And I just cried out loud and said, no, I'm not done. I'm not ready. And God told me I am done. So there's been a lot of questions about Kevin and how he let the abuse go on. He did tell Ruby in this phone call, "I'm committed to our family. I'm committed to you and our marriage no matter what happens. I will be here to support you in any way that I can." So that was September 2023. He has since filed for divorce and he has spoken about why, you know, how it all happened, which I feel like it's a bit of a cop-out because he is an adult who could make his own decisions and choices.
I remember but even when we last recorded, he said that basically he was like kicked out or like Jody stole them away, basically.
Well, this is what he said. There's an article just from this week where he speaks about it. He said basically I'll read the quote. It says, "There were all these rules now placed on me, like I can leave when I want, but I couldn't come back until Ruby gave me permission. I couldn't come into the kitchen to eat until Ruby gave me permission. And the upstairs where Jody was completely offline. I couldn't go upstairs anymore in my own house. And Ruby would dictate all of the terms of how our interactions would be when we could talk. And that was hard." And it was during that
Shouldn't
time
that have been like a red flag to him.
Yeah. It was, he said, "It was really during that time that I really became, I would say, dependent upon Ruby. Like if she said a kind word to me, my whole day was made." So, you know, I feel like he has played a role in this as well. He stood by and let it happen just based on the control.
Same thing by
that
being
Ruby,
complacent.
Yeah. So there have been a lot of questions about Ruby's and Jody's actual sentence. So they have been sentenced to between 4 and 30 years, which I know seems like a weird amount of time. And they have, like, you know, most times they say they'll be sentenced and they will be, you know, they'll get whatever they are going to serve. But how I think it works in Utah is that basically the Utah Parole Board will set their sentence. The first parole hearing will be one time at some point after the first year that they've served. So they will have to serve a minimum of 4 years. But following the hearing, the board can either schedule a parole date, schedule a release without parole, schedule a rehearing, or order an inmate to serve the full sentence. So there's a really good comment I found on Reddit. I'll just read it because there's a lot of confusion about their actual sentence. It says, "She was sentenced to 4 consecutive sentences of 1 to 15 years. So a lot of people were thinking that she could serve 60 years, but she actually can't. It's capped at 30 years. It says, "Utah, along with majority of states, utilizes an indeterminate sentencing system. This means that the judge sets a minimum and a maximum time frame, and the parole board decides when you get out within that time frame. So basically, they will both serve a minimum of 4 years and a possible maximum of 30 years. They'll be up for parole after 4 years and could get out at any point after that." So essentially, it'll just be an ongoing thing, possibly as to when they get out, unless the parole board says, "No, you will be serving X amount of time." I feel like they will I would hope they wouldn't get out after 4 years based on the footage. Like the injuries that the kids have just looked so painful and horrendous, and the kids are so emaciated. I just can't even imagine what they went through.
And just reading through the diary entries, just this was like days and days and days of fasting. They weren't allowed to eat. They're being forced out in the sun. And every day being told they're possessed by demons, that they're liars, that they're being manipulative when they're really just like, "What are you doing to me? The kids know this isn't normal." And they would lie and say like, "Okay, like I'm not possessed anymore." But, you know, Ruby and Joey would be like, "No, you're still possessed." And so then they'd be like, "You're lying about this is the demon." And just like months and months of this, I couldn't even imagine just the emotional turmoil that these poor kids went through. There's parts where Ruby wrote about how the daughter would sing songs during the day, like, "My mom doesn't feed me, my mom hates me," and stuff like that. It's sad. It's like exhausting to read so much. I couldn't even imagine living through what these kids live through and having to then be like, "I'm not possessed by a demon. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm normal," after all this time of your own mother basically trying to like drown and burn and starve a demon out of you.
It's crazy and just so sad.
Yeah, not what I expected. I was thinking about it. I was like, how did like she get to this? Because I mean, she always seemed a little out of touch, but almost in the opposite way. Like she was just very controlling and stern and strict and didn't really give off a religious extremism vibe in her YouTube videos, as far as the ones I've seen. But I would wonder Even then, it seemed like the two younger ones kind of got the brunt of it, especially the younger one, R, as he goes by now.
I feel like it has to all... Well, and I'm like, obviously, I think Ruby is totally guilty, but I feel like this really escalated once she came into contact with Jody. This is when it all seems to have kicked off.
Since, and we kind of said this a similar thing about Birdie, the one who burned her kids in the house, where Ruby's whole brand is her kids and raising her kids and raising good kids with her like different punishments, but look how great the kids turn out. And maybe the younger ones were having a harder time and were more misbehaved. And she was like, obviously this can't get out that my kids are bad. This is my whole brand. So she goes to Jody for help. And Jody, we saw before she even met Ruby, Jody had some very extreme ideas on everything in life. Not normal, very alternative, messed up views on a lot of things. And I think she essentially brainwashed her into believing like this is why her kids are the way they are. And I think Ruby was desperate since her kids and her family are like her entire brand and personality and income, basically. Very, it's kind of has to do with like the cult stuff that we were talking about too. Like just wild how this can happen to someone.
It's so like we posted like CCTV footage of the son after he escaped and went to the neighbors and he asked for help. And he's just
so brave. So sweet.
He's like, can I ask for two favors? Actually, just one favor. Can you just please take me to the nearest police station? And
The neighbor then calls 911.
Tell me exactly what's happened.
I just had a 12-year-old boy show up here at my front door asking for help. And he's said he just came from a neighbor's house, and we know there's been problems at this neighbor's house. He's emaciated, he's got tape around his legs, he's hungry, and he's thirsty.
Is your door locked?
No, I'm sitting outside with him on the front patio.
Okay.
And he asked us to call the police.
What's
so he's very afraid.
The neighbors out of their home, or is anybody looking for him that you can see?
No. Our homes are far enough away. I'm not sure. How did you get out of the house?
Porch. He went out.
He says he just left through the porch at the neighbor's house. Her name is Jody Hildebrand, and she lives two doors up the street.
The neighbors were so kind. I can't even imagine if a kid turned up on my doorstep, like, injured. I'd be like, what is going on here? Is someone, like, you'd be terrified yourself. But they were so kind, and they sat with him, and the lady, like, got down to his level, and she's like, you're a good kid, you're a good boy. And it was so brave of him to do that. One silver lining is that they did manage to get out, and this was stopped. Like, this would have absolutely gone on for however long until they were found out.
Until one of them died.
Yeah.
I think. It would have. It definitely could have been another Lori Vallow situation, but yeah, I'm glad at least when he did escape, he seemed to have found two very kind people to help him.
Definitely.
So we'll see what goes on with that. I don't know, like, how much more information we're going to get. When it seems like it might be kind of a long process, especially since there's not like a trial because they pled guilty. Right?
They both pled guilty to four counts of child abuse as part of a plea agreement.
Yeah, so it's not like there's going to be a trial or anything, but assuming more information will come out, so we'll see where this goes. Pee! God. She just, like, gets these, I know it's zoomies, but she gets these, like, bursts of energy, and she just sprints down the hall because she has all this room now.
Before we get into the episode, we're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Fume. Have you ever tried to break a bad habit? Sometimes it can feel so hard, like you're trying to climb a mountain in flip-flops. We've all been there, but here's a breath of fresh air, Fume. It's not about giving up. It's about switching it up. Fume takes your habit and simply makes it better, healthier, and a whole lot more enjoyable. Fume is an innovative award-winning flavored air device that does just that. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors.
My husband and I, we have been using our Fume. He actually stole it from me. He really enjoys using it. It's such a cool, unique product. It is flavored air, essentially. I wasn't sure really what to expect from it, but trying it, it's really flavorful. It's really fresh. There's so many different cool flavors. It's almost like a sweet little treat. And another bonus about it, it's really fun to hold. It's heavy. It's a good weight. It's got, it comes apart, but it's magnetic. So you kind of fidget with it. If you're an anxious person like me, you can fiddle with it. Gives you something to do with your hands.
Start the year off right with a good habit by going to tryfume.com/TCS and getting the journey pack today. Fume is giving listeners of our show 10% off when they use our code TCS to help make starting the good habit that much easier. Start the good habit at tryfume.com/TCS to save 10% off the journey pack today.
On to the next. We're going to talk about some dough cases. We haven't done a dough episode for a while. I always say I have like a love-hate relationship with them because I'm just curious about what happened to them. And interesting as any unsolved cases, I'm always like, but I want the answers.
I feel like too, it's so rare to have unsolved dough cases. Like I know sometimes it might take a little bit of time, but you know, obviously with DNA and everything, it's much rarer to have these people remain unidentified these days.
Especially, because these are like modern day ones. Mm. Like back the older ones, it's more understandable. Like science has progressed a lot more since then. So
probably all the evidence
kind of crazy
wasn't preserved for testing and things like that. That's why there are still, I guess, historical does. But the ones that we're going to discuss today are just from the last few years. So it's interesting that they haven't been identified yet.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to get into is the case of two does that were found together, a male and a female. Their remains were found in 2020 in New Mexico. These does are known as the Pinos Altos John and Jane Doe. On June 25th, 2020, there was a forest fire in Pinos Altos, New Mexico, and the U.S. Forest Service had been working to clear brush in the nearby Gila National Forest in an effort to stop the fire from spreading any further. Some background into the Gila Forest. It has over 3 million acres of forested hills, majestic mountains, and rangeland. It's probably best known for its wilderness areas, in particular the Gila Wilderness, the first wilderness in the United States. Pictures of it are stunning, very beautiful.
Very tree heavy though. Like it's not, do you know what I mean? Like it would be, like that's why I find it interesting that these does were found there, because it's not like a sparse area where it would be, you know, it's just,
yeah, it's definitely, it's like
very
densely wooded,
densely forested,
but very pretty. As the forestry firemen employees were working, they came across human skeletal remains. Police and a medical examiner were called to the scene, which was near the Ben Lilly Monument. And just a little bit about who Ben Lilly is. A blurb says, Benjamin Vernon Lilly, or Ben Lilly, 1856 to 1936, was nicknamed Ol' Lilly, was a notorious big game hunter, houndsman, and mountain man of the late American Old West. He remains famous for hunting down large numbers of grizzlies, cougars, and black bears. He was known for even killing one rogue black bear with his Bowie knife. So an article was released by the SC Daily Press in July. It said human remains were found in the Gila National Forest near the Ben Lilly Monument on June 24th. According to a report filed by the Grant County Sheriff's Office, authorities are not releasing any identifying information related to the discovery, which was reported by the U.S. Fire Service. I mean, the U.S. Forest Service. The remains were found, quote, in the Pinos Altos area, according to the Grant County Sheriff's Office. So the report said that the human remains were found in rough terrain, approximately a mile from NM-15 near Ben Lilly. It indicates that three hotshot fire crew members out of California led deputies to the body on June 25th. Detectives recovered a Smith & Wesson revolver from the scene, but they were unable to read the weapon's serial number due to the rust. The report also said that human bones were scattered all over. One of the investigators said, unfortunately, I have nothing to add at this time. other than our criminal investigation division is working to identify the remains, and the case remains open. So after the medical examiner investigated the remains, it was discovered that the bones belonged to two people, a male and a female. The male is said to have been black and was aged between 30 to 70 years old. When entering his info into NamUs, they put it as that he is 68 to 75 feet tall. So we're guessing that it should be 68 to 75 inches, which would be like 5'8 to 6'3 for his height.
And for anyone who doesn't know what NamUs is, it's the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. So it's kind of like a database for missing unidentified people, where they can put photos of Jane and John Does. I do find it interesting, though, that these Does have been in there for a while and still they haven't gone in to fix the height error, which makes me not that confident about the investigation. But yeah.
Yeah. So then for the female, there's even less information. It says that she was estimated to be between 26 to 53, but more likely below the age of 50. And there's no info about her ethnicity or any physical characteristics. Some belongings that were found with the remains, there was a green backpack, a destroyed matchbox with matches in it, a cane that is thought to have been made out of wood, two watches, one pair of binoculars, and a pocket knife. And there are pictures of all these things. The list goes on. There's also a pen, pair of glasses in a leather case, a blister pack for some pills with two pills missing, a small figurine or earring of a lizard, smoking pipe, Walmart receipt is found in the backpack with the date of August 5th, 2015, and female underwear and male clothing, as well as white and pink athletic shoes. So, I mean, if you knew them, you could maybe identify, like I said, the watches, the clothes.
The lizard earring.
Little lizard.
Is quite distinctive. It's like a lizard and then the tail is kind of curved, so that would be the part that would go through your piercing. Like it's... I was reading the comments about this on Reddit and they're like, I've got the exact same earring. So I feel like it's not one of a kind, but it's unusual. Like I feel like if your mother or someone had it, you might remember it.
Yeah, she'd be like, Mom, why are you wearing a lizard earring?
I feel like the pipe is kind of interesting too. Like not many people smoke an actual pipe these days. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah. For some reason, the watches stand out to me, especially the girl one. It's not anything... like crazy unique, but I feel like that's recognizable.
There's been a bunch of comments I read too about why they can't get more information from the Walmart receipt, but there's comments about how it could be a thermal receipt. You know, they turn black after a while with sun exposure, so maybe they could just read the date. Or even if they bought, like maybe for instance, they bought a drink with cash, like what is that going to tell them? Like, all, like the location might, I haven't seen the location of the Walmart, whether or not that can be read on the receipt.
There's no way like, they have. Yeah, footage or anything still at this point either. Yeah.
Especially after they were found, if they did die in 2015, the 5 years later, they wouldn't have anything.
Yeah. So a notebook was also found and authorities said that it contained suicide notes, but the notes have never been made public. There was a loaded Smith & Wesson 357 that the serial number couldn't be read due to the rust that was on it, unfortunately.
I'm so interested why they haven't released the suicide notes. Like if, even if there was no names or anything, maybe there would be other ways to identify who had written them, unless it was just like,
yeah, like if someone
we're
knew
sorry
them,
or something
might...
like that. Like, I just feel like, you know, it can't hurt to release them if they don't know who these people are.
Yeah. Like there's no point in keeping them private. So while researching this case, we came across some Reddit comments with a suggestion as to the identification of these does. Raquel Rodriguez and her boyfriend, Abraham Jimenez, were last seen in Hagerman, New Mexico on April 19, 2015. The last known person to have contact with Raquel was her son on April 19, 2015 at their home, and he reported her missing about a week later. Abraham and Raquel lived in the country outside of Roswell, New Mexico, but her van was found abandoned about a mile from their home. When it was located, it was in working order. The couple had a number of animals that were left behind without food or water, and law enforcement has not found any evidence of foul play, but say that the disappearance was suspicious. So Google Maps says Roswell is around 300 miles or a five-hour drive from where the remains were found. There are no rule-outs on NamUs for any testing between Raquel and Abraham and the remains that were found. It seems like they really just don't care about this case. Like, the investigators just processed it and left it. Let us see the notes. Are they these people? Are you doing anything with this case?
And even, like, so how NamUs works is if they, like, so, for example, if they had this John Doe and they test them against Abraham, for example, they would say this is ruled out. Like, so they list that kind of, corresponding rule-outs or testing, but there isn't any for either Doe that has been put into NamUs. It could just be it hasn't been updated. There are a few issues, I guess, with Abraham. Like, in the comments, everyone's like, you should submit this as a match, which I absolutely agree it should be submitted, but things like Abraham wasn't black, which is what they said the John Doe was. He's Hispanic. He was also 74 when he went missing, so older. But, you know, I guess these things can sometimes be messed up. And we obviously don't know anything.
When the remains were, like, scattered about.
And they didn't really say anything much about the female remains. So I do agree, like, you know, same state, the date range match. They were last seen on the 19th of April. That Walmart receipt was from the 5th of August. So do you know what I mean? They could have been in the area at the time. I feel like it's absolutely
a male and a female.
Yeah, together. Who are, like, I just feel like, too, it's so much less likely that no one would miss two people. Like, maybe one person you might think, oh, yeah, they've gone to start a new life. But two people is double the amount of families. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just less likely that no one is missing two people and that they're still unidentified 4 years later.
Yeah, very strange.
It's strange. I really wish they would release the suicide notes. You know, it could just be like a one-line thing, like, we have taken our own lives and that was it. But maybe there's more information and I would be interested to know.
Yeah, and it could mean something to the families. Like, if her son reported her missing, maybe the note would mean something to him if it really was her, and he could be like, hey, that definitely is my mom.
Definitely. So the second case we're going to cover is one that we've actually spoken a lot about on our social media, as it's pretty recent. The skeletal remains of a woman were found in Wadesboro, North Carolina in 2022. Her cause of death is currently unknown, but before her body was found, she was apparently seen on a trail camera. So we have put the photos of this woman on our Instagram and Facebook before. They're very eerie photos. It looks like she's wearing, like, a bra and maybe underwear and maybe, like, some type of, I don't know, legging type.
Shapewear?
Yeah, it looks like shapewear. And basically she's walking in front of the trail camera carrying a stick. There are a lot of comments about how her body looks quite postpartum, like her belly is very soft. Either that or she's lost a lot of weight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like the photos are super eerie because why is she out? Like, so many questions too. Why is she out in the middle of the woods basically on a trail cam wearing no clothes? In the middle of the night, like, there's a lot going on here. So
it looks kind of, I can't say, it looks like she's struggling to walk. Is that why she has the stick? Like, she doesn't look like she's walking very easily.
No, it's not like she's just strolling past. It looks like she's relying on the stick for help to walk, I would say. So this information about this woman is from NamUs. It says, on August 22nd, 2021, a white female was observed on a trail camera set up in the area for hunters. Still photographs are attached, which are the ones, and I'll pop them on we'll make a blog and on our Instagram too if you want to check them out. It says, in February 2022, near where the remains were found, a backpack was found by rabbit hunters who removed an undisclosed amount of cash and left the backpack in the woods. It was not able to be located after the remains were found. So this woman, the remains of this woman, as we said, were found in 2022, but she was seen on the trail camera in 2021. So a little while after that. So we posted the photos of this doe on our social media. Many people thought that this woman resembled April Reed, who had been missing since 2021. This is an excerpt from the Hickory Record. It says, Sergeant Stella Jennery said the Lenoir Police Department received around 10 calls and multiple messages on Thursday after the crime podcast True Crime Society posted pictures of a woman spotted on a hunter's trail camera near where the body was found in Wadesboro. Commenters said the woman in the photos resembled April Reed, but that they asked NamUs to run a dental comparison on the body and they were not a match to April. So that was ruled out pretty quickly. I was surprised because I did feel like the woman absolutely resembled April. The circumstances were very similar, but it wasn't her in the end. So this case is still ongoing. There's a recent article from the Anson Record where we've learned some more information. They interviewed Detective Brian Tice and he said, we cannot confirm or deny that foul play was involved, but I can tell you we are treating this as a homicide. I guess they do that anyway in unexplained deaths, but it seems like kind of a contradictory statement. It says, and this is also contradictory based on what is in Namus. So Namus has said the woman on the trail camera is basically the remains that were found, but this detective kind of doesn't allude to that as much. He said, according to the detective, it is currently unknown if the skeleton found belongs to a man or a woman. Information such as clear cause of death, hair color, height, race cannot be determined from the evidence found at the scene. The only confirmed evidence was a bra, which was black, and the material may be consistent with a pair of leggings. The detective said, you know, in this day and age, clothing is not a determining factor when assigning gender. The detective also confirmed that the remains were mostly intact and that the bones were found near each other. He also said no large walking stick was found located near the body or during perimeter searches. They were asked how confident investigators were that the woman on the trail camera is the remains that were found. And he said, we really don't know. We cannot say with 100% certainty. So that definitely goes against what he said on Namus. They said the woman on the trail camera, then her remains were found. So I feel like it's very likely that it is the same woman, but I guess they just don't
want to say that and then have it not be.
Yeah. So also connected a lot to this case is that the backpack was found with money in it by these rabbit hunters who basically took the money and left the backpack. The detective said he's not sure how this information was leaked and it's not an accurate account. He said there was no large sum of money found, no wallet or identification. He said that there was a backpack that was found, but he's added that he's not sure. He added that it's not sure if it's related. So I guess they're being kind of cagey just in case it's not related. But I feel like all these things out in the middle of the wilderness, essentially, where a body was found, are likely to be related.
What is the thing she's walking by?
It's like, I don't know, is it a well or is it like
a swing, a bench?
I don't know. It looks...
I have no idea.
I've never actually even seen either what clarified to be what it is. It's like a wooden structure that looks like it's got some type of bench seat and a cover. I don't know if it's like maybe a water thing. I don't know. I have no idea, to be honest.
Yeah, someone I can't tell know. If it's like a seat or something that holds water. I don't know.
So many people have speculated that the remains may belong to Amber Rae Johnson. This is some background about her disappearance. It says Amber Rae Johnson was last seen Thursday, August 19th, 2021 in Bullhead City, Arizona. Both of her ears are pierced. She has a tattoo of black ink on the inside of her wrist and a tattoo of a flower on the inside of her ankle. So she went missing on August 19, and this doe was seen on August 22, so very, very soon after she went missing. It says, on the day of her disappearance, Amber's boyfriend left to go to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Amber was supposed to take a bus to Myrtle Beach on August 16th. In her last Facebook post on August 19th, Amber was live, like she went live on a bus. She has never been seen or heard from again. Amber's food stamp card was used by another woman after her disappearance. When questioned, the woman stated that Amber's boyfriend had sold her the card. In the months prior to her disappearance, Amber had been using drugs and acting paranoid. It's unclear if she ever arrived in Myrtle Beach and who was the last person to see her. Circumstances surrounding her disappearance remain unknown. So at this point, it does appear that Amber's DNA and dentals are being compared to this Jane Doe. This is an update. They've got a Justice for Amber Rae Johnson Johnston Facebook page, and this is an update from that. It says, got dental records for our mother, daughter, and friend. Family has DNA on file, just waiting for answers. I just wish this process wasn't so long. I wish we could have started this in 2022 when a body meeting Amber's description was found. If this is you, Ams, we will get you home soon and you'll be resting by Graham and Pap. I'm only minutes away and there all the time. We will keep pushing. So despite the family seeming to maybe believe the remains might be Amber and waiting for confirmation, Detective Tice did make another bit of a contradictory statement in the Anson record. He said the department is not waiting on confirmation the remains are Amber. We are pursuing leads in Winston-Salem. So I personally feel.
So is that them saying like it is her? I don't know.
I don't know. I really don't know what that statement means. I have seen there may be some connection between Amber and Winston-Salem, like as in her ticket may have been to that area, the bus ticket, but it seems weird to say that they're not waiting on confirmation that the remains belong to her. It's just very unusual. There are some YouTube like crime YouTube channels that say she actually got off the bus in Winston-Salem and she didn't reboard. The police haven't confirmed that, but maybe that is why he made the statement. But it still seems weird to say that they're not waiting on confirmation the remains are her.
Yeah. Like, what does that mean?
Very strange. I don't know. He seems to make a lot. I guess he's just trying to not tie himself to statements, like, you know, rather than, yep, this is, we believe the woman on the trail camera is that, is the same woman who we found. I feel like he's just been a bit ambiguous about it all.
Yeah. I feel like it could be her. I was just trying to, like, compare them because the pictures on the trail camera, it seems like she kind of has, like, a heavy brow. Like a, I don't know if it's insulting to say, like, Neanderthal-esque. And it does seem like Amber could have, like, a bigger forehead area like that. But it's hard to tell because the CCTV is from, it's, like, pretty clear for a trail camera, not CCTV. But it's still hard to really see her, any defining features besides that she's blonde and kind of her silhouette shape of her body and face. But it's from a distance.
I have a lot of questions, like, why, if it is her, why was she in the, like, I know they said that she may have had a drug problem, so maybe it had something to do with that, but then, like, they haven't said that anyone else was seen on the camera, so maybe it's, like, I don't know. I just have a lot of questions if it does end up being Amber.
I was thinking when I first saw the trail camera pictures, I assumed drugs or maybe mental illness, just because it was pretty strange looking, the circumstances of what was going on. I was just thinking, I have had friends who were, like, addicted to drugs or just had addiction issues, and it's very hard to keep tabs on them, especially when they're in a bender. You never know what they're up to or where they're going to turn up or what they're doing. So I can understand why it seems super random, or why maybe some does in general aren't found, and it's not that their family aren't missing them, of just when people go on a bender like that or something, they could turn up in a different state, and sometimes the news doesn't always get around. Like, this one was a little more viral because it is strange, the pictures are a little eerie, and we posted it, not to be like, oh, we have such a big Instagram account, but it was one of the posts that a lot of people were interested in, a lot of people were commenting on, and it seems like a lot of people called in tips and stuff from it as well. So sometimes the word just doesn't get out to the right people, it seems, with does.
So just a little bit more information about kind of the timeline for Amber. It says that basically she was supposed to take a bus to Myrtle Beach on August 16th. And I'm assuming then that's where she left from Bullhead City in Arizona. And then it says on August 19th, she had a live video of her on a bus. But Bullhead City to, let's just say, if she did get off the bus in Winston-Salem, that is a 31-hour car drive. I'm assuming on bus it would take a lot longer with stops. You know, she'd, you know, probably have to get off and change buses and things like that. So, like, even from the 16th to the 22nd, I guess it's possible that she could have. And then Wadesboro is, again, another hour and a half from Winston-Salem if she'd get off the bus there. So let's just say 33 hours via car. Could she have made it in 4 or 5 days to there to be seen on the trail camera? Like, it's possible. But we don't know where she was on the bus on August 19th when she went live. I guess she could have been close
or
to the area.
Or what state of mind she was in.
Yeah.
If she was doing drugs and paranoid, I feel like you'd have to be very kind of focused on your path to get there promptly.
So, like, did she, it's essentially across the country, so did she really get across the country, get off a bus, somehow find her way to Wadesboro and go into this forest area in that amount of time? Like, it's possible, but maybe not totally likely. I don't know. Anyway, it's 2,173 miles is just to Winston-Salem if that's where she got off. So it's a big journey on a bus to doing that amount of time.
Yeah, that makes it seem a little less likely, even though they look similar. The other girl looked similar to her too, though. That's not always the answer. Just could be someone that isn't even really reported missing.
Oh, yeah. No, so there was an update from a few hours ago. And this is kind of interesting, from 5 hours ago. It says, hello, the page must have posted some photos kind of indicating there might have been someone else in the trail camera. They wrote, hello, everyone, update on the photos. Law enforcement has confirmed that no other people were in the background and that the photos were altered, basically. So they have removed the photos from the website. So there is just whoever it is on the trail camera, and they're still, as of 6 days ago, it says they're still waiting for DNA and dentals to be compared to Amber and the doe. So we'll post the photos again on our blog of the trail camera, and you can also look on NamUs. You can just search by state and look at the information for all of these does as well. There's photos of the lizard earrings and the backpacks and the glasses in the Pinos Altos case. So we'll post all those as well if you want to check them out. But as of the time of recording, all three of these people are still unidentified.
So that's it for this episode. We will have a blog on this as well at truecrimesocietyblog.com if you want to read a little bit more about it or see everything on a website. And obviously our Instagram, we're always posting information on there. That's probably the best place to follow us. Our handle is True Crime Society. And if you want to follow our personal accounts, mine is StephSum_, Olivia's is TCS Olivia. You could see what we're up to. I'll try to post some more peep content since now I know she has so many loyal fans.
She needs her own Instagram.
Oh my God, I can't even manage another Instagram. If you can leave us nice reviews on Apple or ratings on Spotify or reviews on whatever, you can leave comments on Spotify. I don't always check them promptly, but I'll check them eventually. And share the podcast with your friends or post them to your Instagram stories is a big help to us. We always try to reshare them. But it is a great way to show your followers some podcasts you're listening to, and maybe they'll be like, maybe I'll listen to that. So big help to us when you guys do things like that. So all we can ask is that you keep sharing the podcast and helping us grow our audience. But that is it. So thank you guys for listening. Stay safe out there. Peace out.
See ya.